Thank you, Ryan. Hi, everybody. It's Bill and it's Wendy. And yes, it's Friday. And look outside. You couldn't get a better day than this. This is impossible.
We have been blessed, I'll tell you, because it's been really nice and warm and sunny and lovely during the day.
Right.
And no air conditioning because at night...
cools off nicely.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is perfect.
That's all about to change, Bill.
Yeah, it's going to get really, really hot, right?
Hot, humid, sticky, sweaty.
That's all right.
Those are my favorite dwarfs.
If they did Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs in Chicago, those would be the dwarfs. So enjoy this because, you know, in January, you'd do anything in the world for a day like this.
I heard Ryan Burrow doing a news report earlier this week, and he said, don't you wish you could just bottle today up and whip it out in January?
Yeah, he's right. As per usual.
We talk about whipping stuff out in January.
That's right.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, I had a pretty wonderful night last night doing something that I never would have imagined I'd be doing.
What is it? Should we guess?
Sure.
Ryan, take a guess. Wendy did something last night that she never thought she would do. What is it?
She got all caught up on Dancing with the Stars.
That's a pretty good guess. Kevin, you want to take a guess at this? Wendy did something last night she never thought she would do. What do you think it would be, Kev?
Went to a painting class.
Speak into the microphone.
I've done that. Went to a painting class. I've done that.
There you go.
I'm going to say 6.5 hours of scrapbooking.
Yeah, I'd never do that.
That's not it. All right. What is it?
Paint in the Garage.
No. I have a favorite musical.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Jesus Christ Superstar is probably my favorite now, but there's an earlier one from 1961 that I absolutely adore.
Mm-hmm.
With the young Natalie Wood,
mm-hmm.
Russ Tamblyn.
Mm-hmm.
Watched West Side Story with my two boys last night.
How about that?
They loved it. It made me feel good that they loved it.
Uh-huh.
They did not roll their eyes when I sang every song to it.
Did you do that?
Yeah.
Did you sing along?
Yeah. I got to tell you that Natalie Wood was probably the most beautiful woman in the entire world.
That's very striking. Yeah.
Such
a doubt.
A great musical. Yep. That's all I wanted to say. And it's nice because everybody talks about, my girls and I did this. My boys and I watched a musical, and we all enjoyed it.
Did it take a lot of coercing to convince them to sit through West Side Story?
No, Michael actually requested it, Dylan came in after we had started it when the Sharks and the Jets were going at it, and he sat down and watched the very end of it with us.
Do you think that gang violence could be solved if there was just more singing and dancing?
I got to tell you, these are the best dancing gang members I have ever seen in my life. They are so good.
Sure.
What about the gang members in Michael Jackson's Bad?
They're pretty good, too. They're very good also.
But it's so weird to see a young, I can't remember his name, who played Tony, who then went on to become Benjamin Horne in Twin Peaks.
Is it George Chakiris?
No, that's Bernardo.
Oh, that's Bernardo, right.
I can't think of his name. He played Tony, just met a girl named Maria.
Yeah.
I can't think of
Harris? No, that's not it. Who is it? I'm trying to think of who it is.
Said, come on.
No,
come
I said Shakira's.
Shakira wasn't
it. Is it Shakira?
No.
Who is it? I don't know who it is. Would Jerry Seinfeld kiss them?
No.
He wouldn't? He wouldn't hug them?
But it's weird to see like this young, beautiful man, Tony, an American in love with a Puerto Rican girl, and then tragedy ensues.
Don't give it away.
I'm not.
A lot of people who have
I'm
it on
not.
Their... their cue
from
to see 1961.
That movie.
Right.
But to see him in Twin Peaks, and we're going to see him in this new reboot, which have you been watching?
No, I don't have the Showtime. Well, that's good that you guys enjoyed it.
It was amazing.
Very, very nice. Very nice.
I was up till 2 in the morning because we started it late.
Did you do a Q&A afterwards?
No, but I would have done a panel. I just was, I had to
You should
go to
do
bed.
That at the house. Just set up a small desk in front of your widescreen TV and do a Q&A at the end of the movies.
That would be
fantastic.
Funny.
Mom, not the Q&A. We want to go to sleep.
They call up Richard Roper. Have him join.
He'll do it.
Right?
He'll moderate it.
Yeah.
No. He charges like $30. It's a great
night. I want to do it myself.
Oh.
This is like one musical I know so much about.
Bring in the pros.
Except I can't remember Tony's real name in life. I'm surprised
remember.
You can't.
I'm blanking on the name. Can I tell you what I witnessed last night?
Yes.
All right. Kylie and I went to the Cubs game last night.
Oh, that's right.
An enjoyable evening.
Great night weather-wise.
Yeah, it was perfect. It was just perfect. Except the score did not play out the way we had hoped. But other than that, everything was great. All right. So, two women in front of us, not together but in separate groups. One of the women more to the left of us, in front of us but to the left of us, was there with her husband or boyfriend, and the other woman was there with another friend. with one of the women, all through the game, and I mean all through the game, although they only stayed for six innings, She continuously took pictures of herself and tried to put them on Snapchat unsuccessfully. She couldn't figure out how to do it. And I can't make fun of her because I don't know how to do it either. But she didn't watch a single pitch of the game. And I know this because I couldn't stop watching her. All she did was just keep taking pictures of herself from different angles.
So she was doing selfies. The camera was turned around, not even looking at the field.
Didn't watch a single pitch of the entire game, but continuously took these pictures to send out to friends as if to say, look at how much fun I'm having at the Cubs game. But I think the fun of a Cubs game is watching the game. And I could be wrong.
I have to tell you, this is where my Sox side comes out. Because there are a lot of people at a Cubs game that are there just to be at the party.
So true.
That aren't watching the game.
Just to be seen and nothing else.
Yes.
And I know that that is now part of social media is look where I am. But she didn't have any. She didn't have the slightest interest in the game at all. Zero. But she just wanted all of her friends to know that she was at the game. And then Kylie kept laughing. She goes, all she needs to do is just upload it directly. And it's on Snapchat. And I go, don't even tell her. She's beyond help at this point. Don't even tell her. All right. So then, now that's one, and that's, I guess, an excusable offense. But it's the second one that I find extremely disturbing. Tell me if you are as equally disturbed by this as I am. It's a woman who seems to be about 30. If I'm off, I'm off by a year or two, give or take. She might be 28, she might be 32, but let's say she's 30. And she's there with her husband or boyfriend, I don't know which, and she is pregnant. She is with child, as they say in the Bible, which is a very best, it's one of the best sellers of all time, Wendy, so they know what they're talking about in the Bible. Enjoying the game, watching the game like you're supposed to do, but enjoying the game with a nice cold beer. Not one, but two. One in the early innings, one in the mid innings.
All right. First of all, how can you pay attention to the game if you're judging everybody around you?
I only judged those two people.
Are you sure it was a beer?
Positive.
Are you sure she was pregnant?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
She was pregnant.
Yeah, never ask
she
a girl
was,
if she's pregnant. I told that to my boys
she was
during
pregnant.
West Side Story.
Yeah.
I, believe it or not, did not have one alcoholic beverage or a cigarette. I only had prenatal vitamins and ate lots of steak during my pregnancies. Mm-hmm. I might have tried an O'Doul's, but then I heard that there is a very small percentage of alcohol in it, so I never had another one.
Good. Very good.
I think, I don't even know, it's a really minimal amount of alcohol in an O'Doul's, but I never had one drink when I was pregnant. But I gotta tell you, Bill, our parents smoked and drank when we were pregnant.
I know that. I've seen so many home movies of my aunts and great aunts where they were like on their way to the hospital. And they had a Tarentin, and they were drinking a Falstaff.
A shot of whiskey.
Yeah, on the way.
A painkiller.
I know for sure that for generations and generations, when they didn't know any better, they were smoking and drinking. I get that, but now...
But look at us. That's why.
Right.
Look at the result.
Look at how we turned out.
But see, right. Now that would bug me, and in my heart of hearts, I'd want to like give her a look and go, really? But it's none of my business.
Kylie said twice, she goes, we should say something. And I go, we can't say something. She knows that this is dangerous. She knows you're not supposed to be
she
drinking.
She made the choice.
When you're, right. I wanted so badly to just go, look, this is none of my business. But if you start a sentence out with, this is none of my business, it should end there. Because all parties know it's none of my business. But I just wanted to go, there's data I could show you. If this lady wasn't Snapchatting, I'd show her on her phone. There's data that says it's not a good idea.
Yeah, but that's her business. What if she didn't like your shirt?
She didn't like my shirt. She told me. She was very adamant about my shirt.
All right. Well, we need to discuss this more, and we have to end our query into who played Tony in West Side Story. Richard, you know?
Richard Baymere.
Is that who it is?
Richard, B-E-Y-M-E-R, Baymer.
Baymer. That's, I wasn't going to say him, but that is who it is.
I know that. I thought I would know his name. I thought it would be more popular.
Yeah.
But he did go on to play Benjamin Horne in Twin Peaks, which it was wild to see him surface in that. Do you like West Side Story?
Love it.
Isn't it great?
It's musical night at Wendy's place every Thursday if you're ever in the neighborhood, Richard.
We're watching Hair or Tommy next, so if you'd like to come by.
And Riff was Russ Tamblyn.
Right.
Yeah, right. That's who it was. Is it Amber Tamblyn's father?
Yes, it is.
It is, yeah.
Who you insulted when we had on the air. Thank
you,
Richard.
I told her she shouldn't drink when she's pregnant.
No, you said something worse. Do you remember this?
What do you and your husband have in common or something like that?
Something along those
lines.
She's
married to David Cross, and I...
And you're like, what's up with that?
Yeah,
and she goes, what do you mean?
I did say
and
that.
And then you panicked and said, he's way older.
No, I said way taller.
Oh.
Because he is way older. That would have been too easy. I said way taller because he is way taller.
You kind of prefaced it by saying it was a really crazy mismatch and how, you know.
It is kind of, but they're happy. And that's, that, Wendy, what's more important than happiness?
You should have started with, this is none of my business, but.
I'm start every sentence now with that.
312-981-7200. What do you do? I say you mind your own business.
We were on the brink because Kylie goes, I got to say something. This woman's she's about to have a baby and she's just slugging beer. And I go, you can't, we can't. But I wanted to.
I'm so glad you didn't.
No, I'm kind of glad too.
We have two topics intertwining right now. I watched West Side Story. I've seen it a million times. It's one of my favorite musicals. I watched it with my boys last night. We all enjoyed it. Seeing Tony, who is Richard Beamer or Bamer. I don't know how to say his name. I'm sorry. He was in Twin Peaks, but I'm missing something else, Al.
Yeah. Russ Tamblyn was also in Twin Peaks.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
And I bet if Natalie Wood was alive.
He was who?
Dr.
Jacoby.
Right. That's absolutely right.
So you think David Lynch was a West Side Story fan?
I don't know, but David Lynch did a good job of casting that show.
Everybody in that was good. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Well, thanks for knowing that.
Great actors and a lot of attractive young women.
Have a great weekend, Al. Thank you for that. And the lovely Rita Moreno, of course, in West Side Story. All right, you had a situation at the Cubs game last night.
Yeah, one of the ladies in front of us had a couple of beers, which why shouldn't she enjoy a beer or two during the Cubs game, except for the fact that she looked to be about 7 months pregnant.
Do you do this at a carnival?
Yeah, sometimes at a carnival I'll set up a little booth.
How pregnant are you?
How pregnant are you, booth? Yeah.
All right, Nancy, what do you do in this situation?
Well, I think you kind of missed a teaching moment for your daughter to be an upstander in life versus a bystander because she was clearly mistreating her unborn child. And, you know, I just think it's easy to just sit back and say, oh, that's not right, and mind your own business. But she was abusing something. She was abusing her unborn child. And just in life, you have to be an upstander, even if it makes you look like you're poking at somebody else's business. And I think that just in life, like bullying.
Right.
So many other areas of life you should have taught your daughter. You got to say something to people to protect other people.
Here's what I expected to have happened. If either my daughter or I had said anything, her husband is right next to her, so I'm expecting him or maybe the pregnant lady herself to say, explain to me how this matters to you. How does it? What business is it of yours? And it honestly isn't, but it's haunted me. I mean, it was only last night, but all night last night I'm laying in bed going, that's just with what we know about pregnancy and how alcohol could harm, I felt the need to say something and I didn't. So you're right. I probably should have said something.
I don't think you should have because it would have ruined the rest of your game, her game. You know what? The point is, you pointed out to Kylie, that's not good to do.
Right.
But, you know.
Well, how about at the end of the game you could have said something so it didn't ruin your game, but it didn't bother you the whole night?
Yeah.
But, Nancy, can I ask you something, though? If he said something, she wouldn't have changed it anyway, so what good would that have done?
Well, she might have had an aha moment that said, hey, I am offending other people. Maybe this isn't right. Maybe she would have maybe not taken his message, but maybe she would have.
Oh, maybe.
I think she was aware of the fact she was drinking beer.
And that it's not good for a baby.
Yeah.
Well, she may or may not have. Just like when you tell a bully, stop it, it's not right, and you're doing something mean to somebody else, they may take the message or they might not.
Right. But
I feel you just need to be an upstander, and the more people are upstanders in life, maybe we won't have these situations.
Right, that's true. But boy, that's a tough call, though. It really is.
It is a tough call. It's so tough. My kids always complain to me that I'm too much of a upstander, and I've gotten into situations where, you know, I've helped the situation out because I poked my head.
Not afraid to speak up, yeah.
Yeah, but I've gotten my husband in a lot of fights for speaking up sometimes, too. So there's a fine line. Thank you.
Maybe at the end of the game you should have said something. That's all.
Maybe.
That's all I'm gonna say.
Thank you, Nancy. We appreciate it. Bill, if you see something, say something.
If you see something, say something. And Kylie said to me, now, my mom did not drink before I was born.
Nor
my
did
mom
mine.
Was not a drinker.
But there were parents that did that. My mom didn't smoke either.
Right. Neither did mine. But Kylie said you should have, you know, just to lighten it, say, you know, my mom drank when she was pregnant with me. And look how I turned out. Do you want your kid to be like me? And the answer would have been a quick no.
That would have been funny.
Absolutely not. I don't want my kid to end up like you. It was just so uncomfortable, and it shouldn't have been. But I'm like, right? Do I see? No, I better. I want to. I don't know.
Can we continue talking about this? 312-981-7200. We're going to break for news because there comes a point where really, who are we to judge? Maybe there are things that we do that aren't perfect.
But don't you hear? This is something I started when I was a kid, and I do this every day. No matter what I'm doing, I say to myself, am I inconveniencing or bothering other people?
How is she inconveniencing or bothering other people? She gets to do what she wants. If you feel bad, that's on you.
I think just the mere fact that I was witnessing this and knowing what the outcome could be. If her child is born...
Give her your email address. Let her know everything came out well with the baby. Right.
Please email me 1 week after your child is born so I can stop worrying about this.
I get what you're saying. I totally do. But it's like at some point we have to stay out of other people's lives.
Right. I also have to say I kept looking at other people around us to see if anyone else was bothered by this so we could like almost form... like a committee and
an
go,
intervention.
Look.
That's right. What you're going to do during a Cubs game.
The people of Section 116 want you to sit down. We have something to say to you. I want. All right. Your thoughts on this. 312-981-7200. We'll get some news and then your calls and texts. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Having my baby. What a lovely way of saying how much you love me. Having my baby.
Kevin's very proud of himself
very
with that instant production piece. Good
wow.
job. All right, you're at a Cubs game.
Last night's Cubs game, I went with my daughter Kylie, and in front of us is a woman of about 30, give or take a year.
And maybe she's a listener, so call us at 312-981-7200. Bill has some words for you.
The lady was enjoying the baseball game, and whilst enjoying the baseball game, also enjoyed a couple of beers, one in the second or third inning, one in the fourth or fifth inning. I wasn't that comfortable with it. I just didn't know how to handle it. My daughter Kylie on several occasions said, Dad, we've got to say something. This woman can't just sit there swigging beer. She's obviously about to have a child. And I was right on the fence. Do we say something? Do we not? We chose not to. But now I'll be honest with you, it disturbed me last night. And even the more I think about it today, it's like I probably should have said something, but I didn't.
I don't think you should have said anything. I think she was well aware of the fact that she was having a beer.
Oh, I know. She knew that part.
So you telling her, she'd be like, duh.
I know I'm having a beer.
Mind your own business.
Yeah, I guess.
Jane, what do you think? You're a nurse?
Yes, Wendy and Bill. It's Russell's mom. We see you at Tree
Time. Oh, sure. Hi, Jane. Nice to hear from
guys.
You.
Guys.
What do you make of all this, Jane?
Well, I don't think two beers is harmful. I hope that she got permission from her OB doctor. You're going to a Cubs game. And she says, is it okay if I have a beer or two? I really, you know, don't think it's harmful to have two beers.
And she was definitely showing, because I know towards the end is probably better than at the beginning when the baby is forming.
Exactly. When Russell, I became, I was a nurse, Air Force nurse, and would you believe Russell got the flu when I was pregnant? Hmm. He was first trimester pregnancy. Yes, that's the worst time. Mm-hmm. And I went 8 years trying to find out because I thought, what did I, I took aspirin because I had jammed a fingernail and had a hemorrhage under the finger. And, you know, I went 8 years looking for an answer. Yes, it's a terrible thing to have a child that doesn't come, you know, 100%. Yeah. But I don't think two beers. Now, I hope an OB doctor or nurse will call you and either say I'm wrong or that she got permission from her doctor.
But, I mean, we saw her have two beers, but, I mean, then our contact with her ended. Is
what
that
do you care?
Because I don't...
It's her life.
I know.
Well,
I know.
Bill is right to be concerned,
yeah.
But exactly for the same reason, perhaps. Let's hope that she has permission.
It's not illegal to have a beer when you're pregnant. It's one thing
right.
If you see a kid that's being abused by his parent. Yeah, if you
all
could
right.
jump
two,
in.
Two beers, you know, at a Cubs game.
What if, this is hypothetical.
Okay.
What if she also was smoking? What if I saw her?
What if she shot up heroin on the way home?
What if she was shooting heroin?
How is that your concern?
Well, it isn't his concern, but he is concerned because he has two daughters.
Right.
And he's hoping, you know, that they have seen enough or learned enough not to do these things.
And they did, because Kylie said, should we say something? So you raised them
right. Kylie was on it more than I was, because I'm looking the other way for most of it. But by the second beer, I'm like, oh, that's quite a bit.
What if you see somebody with a nose piercing? Do you just say, you know, when you get a cold, that can get terribly infected. You should take that out.
No.
What if you saw kids in the back seat of a car that didn't have seatbelts on, bouncing around?
Right.
Bill would call the police.
I would call the police.
Well, let's pray that the OB doctor gave her permission and that she's going to be fine and the baby will be fine. And
does the B and OB stand for beer?
No.
It doesn't?
Jane, thank you so much.
No,
Say hi to Russell for us.
Yes, please do.
All right. Sue wants to confront or not to confront. That is the question.
Hi, yes. Good morning.
Hi.
And hi. It is a really tough call, of course, and sometimes I do engage people and sometimes I don't. I tend to agree a bit more with Bill. But, Wendy, what business is it of ours? But in this case, again, like with a baby or a little child running around in an aisle of a store alone where the little kid could get grabbed, I feel like... as us all living on this planet, sometimes I'm very compelled to notify somebody about it so something negative doesn't happen, because these news stories do happen.
Nothing would have changed if you would have said something to her. She would have continued to drink her beer, and it would have been an uncomfortable night for she and her husband and you and your daughter.
It already was for my daughter and I, obviously.
Oh, my God.
Because we were...
Watch the game!
We were watching the game, but...
I understand, and you know it's wrong, and it bothers you.
Yeah.
I get that.
Yeah.
It is wrong.
And I don't mean to gang up on you. I don't.
Right. No, we know that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. If it happened again tonight, I don't know if I would have done it the same or differently, you know? Because it is, as Wendy pointed out, it's really none of my business, but then it becomes more of a society issue where you say, just for the sake, maybe she'll think twice next time if she's in the same situation. Going, people are watching me.
I'm sorry. I wanted to say one other real quick thing on the flip side. For example, I try and make a point when I can. One time my car was broken into, and the police did a really terrific job of the whole process involved with that. And a few days later, I went over to the police department, and the lieutenant came out, and I said, I just wanted to let you know that your team did a really great job helping out with the car situation. And he said, wow, that's usually not the kind of thing that we hear.
They hear bad stuff, not the good stuff. Yeah,
exactly.
Right. I get it.
No, well, thank you.
Thank you so much, Sue.
Thanks, Sue.
Going from one Sue to another Sue. You're a former OB nurse?
Yes, I am.
All right. Talk to us.
I just think Bill's being pretty judgmental, and he's seeing one situation of this woman's life.
Yeah.
How do you know that she has touched alcohol before today and will touch alcohol today or the rest, you know?
Oh, I don't. I just know that 100% of the times I saw her, she was drinking beer.
Well, two beers is not like slamming beers through a 7-inning game.
Right. I would have been concerned if you told me she had 5, 10, you know, she walked out of there drunk.
No, yeah, she did not. She had two.
She had two beers. How do you know, like the other woman said, that she didn't see her doctor this week and said, this is my last hurrah before the baby comes. Mm-hmm. Can I have a beer? He said, 2 is the max. She had her 2 max.
Right.
That baby's going to be just fine.
All right. If you can assure me of that, I believe you.
I could have sworn my OBGYN
said had beer.
No, not like don't have beer, but if you have an occasional beer, feel like it.
Yeah.
Right.
I could have sworn that she said that.
You know, it's a chronic drinker that causes problems for a baby.
So the occasional beer, you say, that's fine. Once in a while, have at it.
Once in a great while. I'm not a beer drinker. I don't know how anybody could drink beer, to be honest.
Well, you should tell people that who drink beer. How can you drink that crap?
Right. Have a Limerita. You'll thank me later.
Two beers in a how many hour, you know?
And those might have been the two beers of her entire pregnancy.
Or maybe she had one on the way to the game. Maybe she had one after the game.
But you can
don't know that.
Right, I know.
You're making a judgment on somebody that you have no idea what's going on.
I know. That's why I didn't say say anything.
And, you know, to defend Bill, which I don't normally do.
No, it's the first time ever.
I know. So write this date down.
Wow.
Honestly, Sue, I think this means more to Bill because his daughter brought it up and he wanted to do the right thing in front of his daughter. Am
That's
I right?
Exactly.
I understand that. And, but you could also have told her we don't know what's going on in her life.
She seemed unhappy.
This could have been just a brief snapshot. So I'm not a drinker. I'm not condoning drinking. And, and I appreciate that you're concerned about this baby. That's wonderful. More people should be concerned. But you're judging somebody that you have no idea what's going on in their life.
All right.
As a person who gets judged all the time, I really understand that we shouldn't judge others because we don't know the backstory.
Yeah, and I just, because if you would have said anything to me, I'd have snapped your head off.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want that.
And we both would have not ended up enjoying the game. And, as I said, I'm not a drinker. I didn't drink I just think as an OB nurse, I would be more concerned if she left there falling down drunk.
All right.
Or had more than the two beers.
Can I ask you, since you are an OB nurse, Sue, I mentioned smoking before. If I saw her puffing on a cigarette, can I say something then?
About that.
All right.
Because she probably was not, she was probably, like a beer, those probably were maybe her only two during the pregnancy. If she's smoking, my judgment would have been, I would have judged her too and said she's probably still smoking.
But you don't know.
I know.
Yeah, but she can't smoke in Cubs Park anyway.
It was outside in the alley.
Oh.
All right. Well, thank you, Sue.
It's harder to quit smoking than the drinking.
All right. That's fair. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sue. Okay. More people want to weigh in on this. I'm not talking about her weight. I'm sorry. She was pregnant. 312-981-7200. We'll come back with your calls. It's Bill and Wendy, 720 WGN.
All right,
one baby.
So last night at the Cubs game, very enjoyable evening. However, the lady in front of us seemed to be about 7 months pregnant, and she had a couple of beers. And the debate between my daughter and I was last night anyway. Do we say something to this woman? Studies have shown that maybe during a pregnancy, beer isn't the greatest thing in the world for you. But as we've discussed, maybe a couple don't hurt. So were we in the right or the wrong to have said something? It ended up we didn't, but should we have?
Well, we had caller Sue who called in and said that you were being a bit judgmental.
I am.
Becky, your thoughts?
Yes, I think Sue's being a bit judgmental.
Towards Bill?
All right.
Yes, I think that, yes, okay. So obviously, if you're pregnant, you can have a beer or two. But like you said, Bill, she was drinking 100% of the time that you saw her.
Right.
And I think that what Sue maybe, it was nice of her to be supportive of the pregnant woman, and that's her job, and I get that. But I think that it's human nature to be concerned about
someone else in the planet.
Concern when you see a pregnant woman drinking.
Yeah.
I get that concern, but we all know that you're not really supposed to drink when you're pregnant. So don't you think she's aware of that? And if she chooses to do that... That's what I, and it would have ruined the game for you and Kylie. It would have ruined the game for her.
Mm-hmm.
And this, it wouldn't have changed the woman's mind.
Right. I totally get your point, Wendy.
You don't think there's any chance, had Kylie or I had said something to her, that she'd go, well, you know what? I hadn't really thought about it, but you're right.
There's no way in the world ever. I would bet you $1 million. She knows. When you're pregnant, that's all you think about. That's all you know. You do all this reading.
But if she did all that reading, she would know that
maybe her doctor said you're in your eighth month.
You need more beer in you.
No, but she said I'm going. See, but you don't know.
You have a serious beer deficiency, and we need to take care of that toot sweet. I bet her doctor said that.
Everybody should just do the best they can, and I get your feeling, and I really believe it's because if you were there alone, I don't think you would have said anything. But Kylie, it was really bugging her.
Yeah, right.
I get it.
And I just wanted to say that I think it's also human nature to want to say something.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
I agree.
And I mean, we've been at Cubs games where we were at the game a few weeks ago, and this girl was so wasted, and she was she had this shrill screaming voice. And Cubs fans were polite. We sat through the whole thing.
Yeah.
And finally, at the end of the game, this guy was sitting next to us who was a Yankees fan. He's like, if you were in New York, you would be wearing beer right now. So he waited till the end. So maybe if, at the end, strike up a conversation, find out what's going on.
Becky, was that woman also pregnant? I'm curious.
You know what? I hope not, because her husband left her at the gate.
Oh, wow. It was that bad. How about that?
She was pretty wasted.
Wow. That's not
good. We were like, take her with you, please.
Sure. Becky, thanks
anyway,
for the...
I love you guys.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate that so much.
You always brighten my spirit.
Thank you so much. Have a good weekend.
Becky. All right. And let's talk to Lori, who is also a nurse. Hi, Lori. Are you an OBGYN nurse?
I am an OB nurse, and I actually represented my nursing organization at the American Academy of Pediatrics a few years ago about fetal alcohol spectrum disorders.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting was about how to have consistency of the message about alcohol in pregnancy. And the message is and should be that there is no safe amount.
Mm.
So it is recommended by the CDC, American Academy of Pediatrics. Academy of Pediatrics.
Which I have their big thick book before online was a thing, and I looked everything up in that book. So totally love it.
So they say all types of alcohol can be harmful, including wine and beer. There is the development of your baby is throughout the whole pregnancy.
Sure.
So we can't guarantee that any amount is safe. The problem is, you know, this girl you saw may have been told by her provider, yeah, one or two doesn't hurt.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem is we're still striving to get consistency that the message is there is no safe amount.
So, I agree with, I had one O'Doul's during my second pregnancy, and when I found out there was actual alcohol in there.
That was the end?
That was it.
Yeah.
Didn't smoke, didn't drink, took my prenatal vitamins, tried to eat well.
Yeah.
I mean, you do the best you can.
You do. Lori, should I have said something or my daughters have said something to this woman or not?
Oh, my gosh. Like, it gives me anxiety thinking that I might have said something,
but
I am like that, too.
But you could back it up. That's what you do for a living. You've got proof of this.
For me,
it was just my opinion.
And I've told family this, too, and they know because they know how I am. But I'm like, you know, I'm just trying to tell you there is no safe amount. And, I mean, I've had labor and delivery nurses' friends who will have a glass of wine in the past. Of course, they probably won't tell me anymore, but you know what I mean? But, yeah. CDC, AAP, you know, that's all we can do is say, here's what our experts say, and we know the harm that can be done.
Yeah.
And people will say, like Sue, no, one's fine. Sue, you don't know that. You know, that's a problem. We don't know that one can't do harm.
Sure, we get
you know,
that.
So
right, and
say,
somebody who has a, you know, who does everything right can have some issues with the birth as well. So you just don't know.
Right.
Yeah, Lori, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, guys.
Have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Too.
Can we just, I know we're running late, but Valerie has a good idea. Valerie, go ahead.
Hi, Bill and Lydia. First of all, I miss you all at the afternoon.
Oh, thank you. Listen on the stream. You'll like it. It's fun.
Yeah. Okay.
All right.
I was thinking maybe your daughter should have approached her and maybe kind of an inquiry type of situation. Like, oh, I always learned that we were not supposed to drink, and then maybe she would have dealt with her kind of differently than an adult.
That's
with an
very
adult.
Interesting.
And if she reacted poorly, Bill, you could have gone, Kylie, keep your mouth closed.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, there you go, Wendy. Yeah.
Let this pregnant alcoholic be. I should have said that. That would have made everything better.
Thank you, Valerie.
Thanks, Val.
Okay, thanks.
You have a great weekend.
All right, we'll take a quick break. And then, there's all kinds of stuff coming up. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Ryan, thanks very much. Kurt Wagner is here from TVShowPatrol.com. And between Kurt and mostly you, Wendy, you guys are playing a very cruel, twisted game with me.
It's not a game. There is someone of celebrity status that has recently passed away who was younger than you'd want to be when you pass away.
Right.
And I wanted your genuine reaction. So, Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com, why don't you break the news to Bill?
Who died, Kurt? Is this going to be awful? Should I brace myself? I'm sitting down. Should I stand up?
It's pretty bad.
Remain sitting?
Yeah. I was surprised.
Who is
Glenn Headley.
Glenn Headley.
Really?
63 years old.
Founding member of Steppenwolf Theater here in Chicago.
Wow.
What
went on there?
No cause of death has been given at this point.
Wow.
And she was filming a new Hulu comedy with Josh Hutcherson.
That's very sad news. Yeah. I'm sorry to hear that. And how old?
63 years
old. Wow. That's awful. That's very, very sad. All right.
She also played alongside someone who also passed away recently at an early age.
Yeah, in a movie that just was out this year, The Circle with Tom Hanks, she played the mother of Emma Watson's character, and Bill Paxton played the father.
Oh,
so
right.
They were together. Yeah.
Wow, that's very sad. Well, wow, that's very sad.
And she was on something I watched recently.
She was in The Night Of.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Bill, you're HBO. Turning on to that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, was Abby Keaton on ER, and yeah. she was yeah. in Monk.
It's yeah, she has quite an array yeah. of yeah. varied
Lonesome
roles.
Dove, she was Emmy nominated for Lonesome Dove, the miniseries.
Why do I keep wanting to put her in something Terminator related? Was she in something having to do with the Terminator? Or am I imagining that?
I don't think so.
Maybe on the TV show. Did she have something to do with that when they made a TV show out of it for a little while? I don't know why.
Well, that, that was. The woman who's in Game of Thrones now, Hedy.
Dick
Tracy. That's who it is. No. That's who I'm thinking of. Right, right, right.
Just a close. Right. The name was close.
All right. On a much happier note, you're just back from France.
Hui.
No, it's we.
No, it's we.
It's we.
What'd you say?
Hoey. It's we. Did they kick you out of France for speaking incorrectly?
No. You know what they say, we, and they say way. And I've noticed just listening to the conversations when they say way, it's like.
No way. Did you say that back?
It's like. An extreme yes.
Oh, so to emphasize the yes.
Yes.
It gets an even bigger build up and it's instead of we, it's way.
I'm guessing that just from listening to all the Frenchies this week.
The reason you were there was there's a TV show that's filming out there.
I love macarons, and so that's why I went.
They brought you out there for that?
Yeah. No.
What's the TV show?
Versailles.
Right, Versailles.
Yes, and it's an English language, French and English co-production. That's an international show that's on Ovation TV in the U.S., first season was the Ovation's biggest show ever, which isn't surprising since most people, when I say it was on Ovation, they say, what's that?
Yeah.
It's an arts network. It's a arts
Is it the Battle of Versailles?
It is about King Louis XIV, the Sun King, who built Versailles.
Yeah.
And it's about it starts season one, which is now on Netflix, starts with his desire, him becoming the full-time king. His mother dies, who is the regent, and he becomes the full-time king, and he decides he wants to make Versailles the center of European culture and politics and everything, and he starts building it despite everyone telling him he's crazy, and the nobility saying, we don't want to move out of Paris to come live here.
And
you
I know in the past you've said some very nice things about the show. You're a big fan.
It's not, you know, historically accurate, but I talked to one of the producers while I was there, and she said, you know, we weren't going for that. You know, we hit the highlights. We find the good parts of history that we think will bring the best drama. And then we just extrapolate.
And it's not historically accurate because it takes place hundreds of years ago, but the king drives a Prius, which is ridiculous because they didn't have those.
He's the only person.
Right. Who has Nobody a car. Else in France has a car but him.
Right. Exactly. Right. But no, the you know, I was on the sets. I got to see season two will start September 30th here. It's currently airing in Europe, but they're filming season three. So I was there for season three.
Oh, nice.
So I got to see all these new sets that I could take pictures of, but I can't share those pictures until next year.
Oh, I gotcha.
But it's incredible. Like, they shoot at the real Versailles for exteriors and the Hall of Mirrors. They shoot in the Hall of Mirrors and stuff. They're the first production, I think, that's been allowed to shoot at Versailles. But they can only do it in a limited amount.
Because why?
Each season, because it's open to the public.
Oh, and right. They can't use it all the time.
And they shoot mostly the exteriors out there. But they've rebuilt the rooms at this you know, where the sets are at the studio.
That amazes me how they can recreate these things so realistically.
It is incredible.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were knocked out and dropped into it.
Right.
And you didn't look up because then you see the lights.
Yeah.
But if you just did this, you know, 180, you would think you were in a king's chamber. It's amazing.
And you already know this, but I'll say it anyway. This is the way television has changed because of HD now. There was a time where those sets would be kind of one-dimensional. They would shoot, depending on what the angle was, they'd shoot it a certain way that you couldn't tell that the sets were one-dimensional. But now that it's in HD, they can't do that anymore. They really have to make it multi-dimensional.
Right. And they're also amazing in how smart they are in building them. Like, there's a prayer room that we saw them shooting something in, and they put all these thick, heavy curtains up around it, but then they can move those out of the way, and behind it, it becomes another room with all these portraits and everything that are up behind the curtains. So it's just, you know, they find ways to cut costs or whatever. But this year for season three, they're building an outdoor area, like an actual Paris street.
Really?
And we toured it. But when we started going in, they were spray painting a wall that was just going to be sort of a background wall. Right. And it looked, you know, like a painted piece of plywood or whatever, you know. But they were detailing it to make it look more like stone and everything.
Oh, cool.
And we seriously walked through. It took us maybe 7 minutes to walk through the whole street, 7 to 10 minutes. We come back. They were finished.
Looks like cobblestone or whatever.
Yeah, I took a photo. If you look at my photo, you think it's just part of old Paris.
That's
you would never
amazing.
Know.
You know, here's how the magic of TV messes with your head. I was the biggest fan of the Dick Van Dyke shows, and there was a special once where Dick Van Dyke showed the studios. And in that, now I never thought of this, but it all makes sense. The set that was the living room and the kitchen was just a foot away from the set that was his office at work. But in my head, no. He
went across town.
He drove.
Yeah, right.
He got out of New Rochelle and he went to the city and he was had an office there. But it was a foot away.
Yeah, that was the case here too. They have to close door. They close the doors because, you know, otherwise you'll see the other set
right.
through, you know, or if they have to do something where they're walking through the door, then they have a special way of shooting
that's
it,
great.
You know?
You know, the set people don't get enough credit for some of these things.
Never.
Seriously.
All this stuff happens that before the production even begins, you know, before the shooting even begins. I mean, the wigs that the guys wear.
Yeah.
I mean, the wigs that the women wear are amazing, but you'd expect that.
Yeah.
But the guys, because it's 17th century France,
so
they're wearing those long, no, it's the long... sort of almost hippie hair. And those wigs are 5,000 pounds a wig that the main actors wear, which is...
That's the price.
Yeah, which is about...
Oh, I'm like, how do they keep their head up? Did you see my face, Kevin?
You know, a broken
I'm not sure how that
Thank
translates.
You for saying that.
Yeah.
But I think it's still around $5,000.
Like,
yeah, it's pretty close,
And
heavier than Dolly Parton's wigs.
And
yes,
you would
is.
Never know. I mean, I was talking to these guys in their costumes, and I was looking at their hairline, and you can't even tell close up.
No.
That's
amazing.
It sounds like huge production qualities for a TV show.
It is. It's the most expensive drama ever in Europe, made in Europe.
How about that?
And the clothes are just amazing.
Yeah.
I wanted to take one of the jackets, but they wouldn't let me.
Versailles, and we can see this on what network?
It's on Netflix right now. The season one is. Season two will air this fall on Ovation, September 30th.
All right, good. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. We'll take a quick break and then more talk. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. Kurt Wagner's here from TVShowPatrol.com. We're talking TV as we do every Friday. Both Wendy and I have something to say to you or ask you about Leah Remini. Wendy, you want to go first?
Oh, yes. I'm a little late to the party. I know season one of Scientology Aftermath or something like that.
Yeah, I can't remember what it's called.
It's really good. I knew nothing about Scientology, and she's really shedding some light on it. I know they're against it, and there are... little warnings up there saying, you know, this in no way is what the Church of Scientology says. It's disclaimer central in between every different vignette. But boy, that is really fascinating to me.
Well, she's a former member.
Yes, who just started realizing, and she shows old video footage of her not shilling for them, but basically saying, you know, it's a great thing to be in because we're going to help the world as we help each other to achieve our success. So they show clips of her saying that because she believed that.
Sure.
And then she started seeing some of the things that were happening to people. For instance, this blew me away. If, like, you're a member of Scientology and someone in your family is critical of them, you have to distance yourself from them. You can never talk to them again. Like, what?
Right.
It's really bizarre and yet really intriguing to me.
Tom Cruise is a Scientologist.
Yes, John Travolta.
John Travolta. There's been a lot of discussion about the whether it's a religion or it isn't a religion or what exactly it is. And she was either left or was cast out, and she's just...
She left.
Her show is to... well, and then I think... when you leave, they sort of go after you
right.
a little bit.
So I'm shocked this can even be on, to be honest with you.
They're very litigious also.
It's pretty brave of her, I think, to have done it and to continue doing it because they have a history of shady dealings.
Hmm. My Leah Remini question is this. She was on with on King of Queens with Kevin...
James.
Thank you, Wendy. I couldn't remember his last
Doug
name.
Doug Heffernan. Doug.
Kevin James. So now he gets his own show, Kevin Can Wait, and she makes a guest appearance last season. And now I just saw the announcement the girl who plays his wife on the show is going to be off the show from now on, but Leah Remini will be a full-time cast member.
Good.
As of this upcoming season.
I love them together.
Well, I think a lot of people do.
Oh,
but I would have hated to have been that actress who was his wife on the show, because she's been shown the door. What happened there, do you know?
I don't know. I hadn't heard.
It was just announced. Oh, you were in France. They waited till you were in France to make this announcement.
I hadn't heard that, so I'm not quite sure what that is. How, I don't know.
That wasn't big news in France?
No. How are they going to finesse that?
I can't figure that out either, because apparently there was a cliffhanger at the end of last season, but nothing that would lead you to believe that his wife was just no longer going to be there, but that's the case. She's out, and Leah Remini is in.
I'll start watching it now.
Now, Wendy's going to watch it now.
All that's right. Weird. I don't know what.
It's good news.
Erin Hayes, that was her name,
she's
who played
out.
The wife.
Yeah. Huh. She's out. What is the Bruce Lee show? What should we know about the Bruce Lee show?
Oh, well, they just announced this yesterday, and I'm kind of excited for it because I like a good karate chop here and there.
Keep that in mind for Kurt's birthday, Wendy. He loves a good karate chop.
It is called Warrior. It's going to be on Cinemax, and it is from an idea that Bruce Lee had, and his family, Bruce Lee Entertainment, their production company, are going to be part of the thing that brings it up. But Jonathan Tropper, who did Banshee for Cinemax, which was a very successful sort of action show, and Justin Lin, who's an action director, are part of the production team. And it's set in during the 1870s, I think, the Tang Wars of San Francisco's Chinatown. And it follows a martial arts prodigy who immigrates from China to San Francisco under mysterious circumstances and becomes a hatchet man for one of Chinatown's most...
Are you reading this, or did you
most powerful
this?
Tongs. I'm reading it.
Oh, you are? Okay, couldn't
he
tell.
Went into a trance.
I saw that. Wow.
And the Tongs are like are a crime family. So.
Oh, excellent.
So, yeah, it should... That'll another be on Cinemax? Another sort of, historical drama, period piece.
24 Legacy came and went very quickly, didn't it?
Yep.
What happened?
There will not be a 25th hour.
Nope,
it's done. It just got canceled by Fox quietly.
It's because they needed Kiefer Sutherland, didn't they?
I think so.
Yeah, to make that work. Orange is the
New
Black.
And I just couldn't, when I watched it, I was like, been here, done this.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessarily because he was gone. It was just more that...
It just, lost its way,
it
didn't it?
It felt like a retread.
Yeah.
I mean, it.
Well, it was. Yeah. It really was. All right, and then Orange is the New Black will continue on Netflix, and that starts this weekend or
today.
Next weekend?
Oh, today.
Talk to me, Crazy Eyes.
The new season dropped today, and I think it's set over only 2 days during the prison riot that ended the last season. 2 or 3 days, I'm not sure.
The whole season will be over 2 or 3 days.
Yeah, I think
that's a new approach.
Yeah.
And it
has to do with the riot.
And the riot took place because one of our favorite prisoners, for people who have not seen it, don't want to divulge, but met an untimely death, and this didn't make the other prisoners very happy.
Right.
Oh, yeah. I forgot. Why do I forget the endings to every movie and television
series?
Seriously.
There's a lot of stuff on, and when there's a year between, it's kind of hard to...
Yeah.
I always love it when they do the 1 minute refresher.
Yeah, I need the video
that
previously
sort of
on
recaps
Hill Street Blues.
The whole thing. Yeah. Also, this weekend Sunday is the Menendez brothers.
Oh yeah, that looked good.
Menendez Blood Brothers.
Yeah,
a lifetime for women.
And Courtney Love plays the mom.
Who do we know who plays Lyle and Eric in this?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing.
That was my favorite communication
between you two, quite
honestly.
I would
hate to know their names because that would make it make it all sensical, but don't tell us.
Oh, that was awesome.
All right, so two of your favorite actors, ladies and gentlemen, playing the Menendez brothers.
Actually, one of them I know who he is, and one of them I don't think I've heard of.
Oh, man. All right, that's even better. All right.
And Courtney Love is surprisingly a pretty good actress.
She is a pretty good actress.
Yeah, and
isn't she?
Larry Flint.
Yeah,
she
is.
Really
was.
Oh,
she was really good in that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm anxious to see.
She hasn't done a lot since then.
No.
Besides, but this is a made for TV movie, and it might be, think of Travolta doing.
Could rekindle our interest. He was Shapiro.
Right, but she
Robert
may be
Shapiro.
Over the top.
There is there's one of those coming that's focusing on the Menendez brothers, too. So this is sort of the first run of
the year of the Menendez.
Of the Menendez brothers things,
Excellent.
But, the interesting thing is, this movie will have a lot more about the stuff that in their second trial they weren't allowed to bring up, which was that they were abused.
Yeah.
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 So
also watch the HBO special that Mommy Dead, Mommy Dearest or something, if you haven't seen that. It's about a woman who has that Munchausen by proxy, and a murder is involved. It's fascinating. It's tragic. It's sad. It's a good watch on HBO.
That's one.
There's
going to
be a ton of those true crime docs coming.
I like that stuff.
Yeah. Popular. That's Kurt Wagner from TVShowPatrol.com. That's the website you want to visit, TVShowPatrol.com. Kurt is back from France, so
au revoir.
Please bring him his mail while he was out. Thanks, everybody. We'll be back after this. It's 1:20 at WGN.
Thank you, Ryan. It is Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder at 720 WGN. And, Bill, you have piqued mine and the listeners' curiosity.
All right. Neil Steinberg is here. Great, great writer. One of Chicago's finest.
Chicago Sun-Times since 1987.
Since 1987. Oh, although you did take a week off, I remember.
I've taken, several times. A couple months of rehab and that kind of thing. Yeah.
All right. So I don't know if you'll remember this. Wendy doesn't. But I'm sure as soon as I refresh your memory, you will remember this. We had a debate, you and I had on the air about 22 or 23 years ago over the silliest thing
I remember
in the world. Do you remember?
I don't remember it either.
This is what it is about. Now, keep in mind, Neil Steinberg is an adult and a writer, a fine, fine writer, and he's got better time for stuff like this, but I could do this all day long. The debate was about whether or not the comic strip Nancy has ever been funny one day.
I remember this. Yeah, of course. I wrote a column.
I know you did. This is what started it.
Ernie Bushmiller, the original artist of Nancy, was my favorite strip.
Yes.
And I was telling Roper this, and Roper said, "You explain that. You know, you tell your readers why you're a Nancy boy." Yes. And at first, I thought I was
literally
like, kind of like handing someone a halter to hang themselves. Right? I figured, I'm not going to. Rich is trying to lead me over a cliff. I'm like, no. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
And I did a column about it. It's on my blog. You know, and whose name I can't mention, sadly. But Bill
took issue with that.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm going to send you the link, Bill.
All right. Would you?
It's funny and it's also deeply weird. It's like when you open the American Heritage Dictionary under comic, there's a Nancy strip and it's sort of funny. You know, it's a surreal sort of thing. And so I'm stand by Nancy. And how often is the chubby girl the star?
Never.
Okay, especially back then. So
right.
And she's got the whole Sluggo thing.
Right.
And, you know, it used to be her Aunt Fritz's strip. It was called Fritzy Ritz. And
right.
It was like those 1940s strips with the lounging in their peignoirs or however you say it.
I have no issue with Aunt Fritzy. I think Aunt Fritzy is as lovely a woman as you'll ever find. But Nancy and Sluggo always leave me disappointed. I can't wait to read it. And I've been disappointed 3,000
times. There's
also personal,
like, I never got Garfield, never for
no,
a second, and people love it. So, you know, again, so I mean, that's why there's a whole bunch of cartoons in the newspapers that, you know, you only have to like a few.
Right.
BC rocked.
Yeah, so everyone has their
weird... PC. I'll take Ziggy all day long.
And,
really?
Ohio. I grew up in his hometown.
Did you?
Tom Wilson.
Yeah, he's great.
He was the biggest star to come out of Berea, Ohio.
Ziggy needs to grow up here, if you want my opinion.
Yeah, Ziggy, see, that to me is kind of morose.
he lets the world trounce on him.
He was so depressive. You know, the Trib would keep him away from all the comics. Remember, he was always in the classifieds.
A standalone,
They didn't want his depression to infect other people, and they'd all... You know.
Funky Winkerbean, your thoughts?
See, that never did it for me either.
I'm
like Doonesbury.
Yeah.
I loved Bloom County.
Yeah,
Mr. Boffo. I became friends with Joe Martin.
He did a signing.
Yeah. And I asked him. I went to his signing at Crocs and Bertano's years ago, and I said, most people can't do one strip. How can you do three?
Yeah.
He did Mr. Boffo, he did Willie and Ethel, and he did Porterfield.
And we
became friends. And he lives up in Lake Geneva, and I've been up to his house several times. He's a really nice guy and funny.
That's so cool.
All right. Are you finished talking comic strips?
Sorry, we were off.
We're finished for now. But honestly, if you ever have a weekend with nothing to do, call me because I'll talk comics with you all day
I'm
going to
send you my I've interviewed Charles Schulz since I'm a huge fan of cartooning even to this day.
Cool.
So, Pearls Before Swine, only in the Sun-Times, all that. Yeah, it's...
All right. Well, let's talk about Out of the Wreck I Rise, a literary companion to recovery. When was this book written?
It was written... It took 5 years to write. It's really odd. I'm an alcoholic. I don't drink. Meetings really weren't giving me that emotional boost I needed. But what I really liked was quotes and philosophy and poetry and certain lines. You know, Virgil, Tuna Sedi Malis, yield not to evil. but go forth all the more boldly to face it. That's kind of a plan.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to someone, to a writer I know named Sarah Bader in New York, and she's like a quote collector. And I was saying how I always thought I could explain recovery using quotes because people don't get it. Even the addicts don't get it. They think it's like this stupid thing they keep doing for stupid reasons. And while you actually have this explanation that these great writers over the eons have done, and so I thought I could write a book about this, but it seems like so much work. I don't really want to do it. And she said, I'll help you.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, really? And she goes, yeah. And so we wrote a letter of understanding, and we spent, I never met her. We spent 5 years writing it in Google Doc, and sort of we'd gather together all these quotes, and then I'd sort of sift them into this. It tells a narrative. That's what I'm most proud of. It's not just, you know, there's a lot of sort of inspirational homilies and things. Here's a quote, here's a quote, here's a quote, here's a quote. But these quotes are assembled in themes. There's a chapter on time. There's a mm-hmm. chapter on relapse. There's a chapter on AA. There's a chapter on family, because family is very important in recovery. It's very hard to do it by yourself. And each quote sort of leads to the next. It sort of tells a little story. And there's also characters. Samuel Johnson is in it, and artist de Kooning's in it, and Jack Kerouac's in it, and different mm-hmm. people are enough that you sort of see what they're like, and you see a side of them that you're not used to. Like I made sure to put in Hunter S. Thompson,
mm-hmm.
because people think of Hunter S. Thompson, oh, he's great, he's gonzo, everyone loves right. him. But if you read the book, you like the quote I have is his girlfriend desperately trying to get him into recovery,
yeah.
but, you know, and how he kind of got himself out of it. And then you have Jan Wenner, the editor of Rolling Stone, saying, you know, he was an alcoholic. It ruined his health. It ruined his talent. You know, yeah. and you see this sort of side, like, oh, right, that's the part that we sort of ignore.
Yeah.
And a lot, I'm hearing from people all over the country. It's in its sixth printing. I mean, you know,
that's tremendous.
As a writer, you always sort of fantasize it's going to do well. And I remember my wife raising an eyebrow when I was kind of saying, oh, maybe this will be the one. And she said, you mean your book of poetry for alcoholics? And I go, oh, right, right. I'm writing a book for myself again, you know. But I hear from people all over the country. Again, it's recovery. I'm most proud of the time chapter because it's today and tomorrow and next week and next year. And you have to kind of keep yourself on track. Otherwise, this thing that you really, really love is going to come back and get you, as we see with like Philip Seymour Hoffman.
Yeah.
There's a great quote from him where he says, addiction is that when you do the one thing you really, really most don't want to be doing.
Mm.
And, you know, here's a guy who struggled and it eventually took him. And so that little bit of advice, and I mean, it's not all highbrow. We quote Spider-Man 2. I was very proud of that. I mean, it took 2 years to get the permissions to quote all these. You know, you can't just take Spider-Man 2. You've got to contact Sony and pay them. And
right,
then,
of course.
You know, and
is
and so,
it with great power comes great responsibility or something else?
No. It's that wonderful Aunt May speech in Spider-Man, where she says, I think there's a little bit of hero in all of us.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And the last line is, even if it means giving up the thing you love. I mean, so that's the point of the book is really, and again, I didn't know if anyone would agree with me, is that recovery is heroic.
Yeah.
Okay, it's the path of the hero. You're doing this really hard thing that most people can't do. It's like climbing Mount Everest. And if I said I climb Mount Everest, I wouldn't have to add, and that's really hard.
Right.
You know, but if I said I gave up, you know, people say they're in recovery and they're proud of it. We're like, wait a second, aren't you ashamed? You know, people are always saying to me, you know, Neil, aren't you ashamed to talk about this? Aren't you embarrassed? I'm like, no, this is the hardest thing I ever did. This is, I'm most proud of this.
Yeah.
You know, and so the book, there's a lot of imagery of mazes, a lot of climbing mountains, a lot of, I think Dante shows up, and not in the hell-like thing, but in Purgatorio, the second book, and it's in the AA chapter, because there's a little bit about having a sponsor, which is very important. You have this sort of pal who helps you. And so the scene you have is him and Virgil are going up Purgatory's mountain, and Dante's always crying and weeping and fainting and things. And he's like, master, master, stop, or I'm going to be left behind. And Virgil says, see that ridge over there? Shut up.
Mm-hmm.
Get up to the ridge and, you know, listen to me.
Right.
And he does, and then he turns around and realizes how far he's come. And that's having a sponsor.
Sure.
That's like sort of what it is. And so,
how many years sober are you?
What year is it now? 2017, 9 years.
You know what's so interesting about that? First of all, congratulations. Second of all, in AA, most people, when Wendy would ask that question, would know to the day,
yeah.
but it took you some scrambling.
Right. Well, I mean, that's, again, I don't put AA down.
It's, but that wasn't your path.
But it wasn't my path. I didn't want to think about it all the time. I most of my day, I'm thinking about other things.
Mm-hmm.
But you need to have stuff that's sort of in your pocket that you can think, oh, I don't want to do this, or I, you know, some sort of image that helps you in different. I mean, I think of addiction as like a beast in the basement.
Yeah.
You've got it locked; it's there. But every once in a while, you like you go and you look at it, or you hear it creak against the door or something, you know. And so, again, I don't put people down. It's like church; you need to have life have meaning, and you go to church every day and you take mass and all that. And I would never go, oh, that's a mistake. But for me, I found that these thoughts and these perspectives helped me stay sober, and I was very gratified. You know, the book's in its sixth printing. I'm going to be at Printers Row tomorrow talking about it. The Lit Fest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and we'll do all those details when we come back. Bottom line, so proud of you, Neil.
Why, thanks.
Yeah, so great. Proud
thank
of you.
Bill, thank
so
you. Good.
Quick break, 312-981-7200. Neil Steinberg is with us. The book, Out of the Wreck I Rise, A Literary Companion to Recovery. It's helped many people. We'll talk about that when we come back. It's 720 WGN. Printers Row Lit Fest happens this weekend, and tomorrow there will be a panel hosted by Rick Hogan, and I believe the person he will be talking to is Neil Steinberg.
As well as Mike Lenihan, who wrote a great book called Much Ado about the American Players Theater up in Wisconsin, and Carrie Lynn.
That's right.
Well, I don't know what she wrote, but I'm sure, you know, so we're at a panel.
He mentioned that yesterday when we spoke.
And we're talking about, I don't know what it is, with Kogan, as you know, it'll be interesting.
Right.
I basically am going because he asked me to, and you can't say no to him because he's such a tremendous, it's like saying no to the city. He's Chicago itself.
You're right.
I was thinking walking over if I could give you my favorite Kogan line, and I just can't. I can't even allude
to it. Too many good ones?
Well, we were talking about Nelson Algren. We were sitting in the arts club, and if you've been to the arts club, it's like older people and professors in ties and things, and he goes, yeah, Nelson Algren, hey, anyway, we hated each other. I once called him a... And I said, well, what did you have against Nelson Algren? And he said, Nelson Algren wanted to blank my mother. And not to think blank, I'm doing it for the radio, but I looked at him and I thought... I'm never in life. No one's going to say that sentence ever in the world.
You're right.
How lucky I am to hear it. So I think tomorrow it's from 3:45 to 4:30, and we're going to be talking about, I think it's immersive writing.
Yeah.
Mike Lenihan sort of went up and joined the American Players Theater. You know, they did that Shakespeare up in Wisconsin and wrote a really lovely little book about the experience. And I guess I was immersed in recovery. I mean, when I did my recovery book, Drunkard, I had no desire to write about it. To me, it was a genre, like a romance novel. But, you know, as a Dante fan, what does he teach you? If you find yourself in hell, take notes, right?
Yeah.
And so I was doing this thing, and I figured I might as well write about it.
Yeah.
And I think that really helped it work for me, because a lot of people sort of cross their arms and they refuse to...
But, Neil, somewhere in the back of your mind, as you're writing this, you say to yourself, I could potentially be helping... even one person or hundreds of people, you must be thinking that a little bit.
That's humbling, but I'm kind of, you know, it's hard for me to be humbled. You know, people write me letters, and I always answer them, and I go out and I talk to people, and I talk to groups. I'm going out to Valparaiso, Indiana in the end of the month, which is a long way away. But they ask, and they've got 100 people gathered, and I can't say, nah, I'm too busy and important, and you're in Indiana, you know. So, I mean, you have to help people, because I think it helps you see how difficult it is for them. I think you owe it because someone helped you.
Right.
I had all these people, starting with my wife, who helped me.
Yeah.
And it's ingratitude of the highest level. I mean, I really did this more for Kogan. But I also, I mean, I love the fact that people take strength from this. You know, I go on Amazon and there are all these people saying, this really helped me.
Yeah.
And I'm relieved creatively that it's not just me, that people aren't laughing at it. And I'm relieved, you know, I'm not a social service, but it feels really good to help people.
Good.
And it's so good when people come out and talk about their experiences, just like with mental illness too. We should talk about it.
Absolutely.
And get it out there so people can go, oh, wow, that sounds like me. I need help.
I've talked to the Kennedy Forum and their whole thing is mental illness, and alcoholism addiction is a mental illness. It is an obsession, and it is a pervasive mental illness that you always have. You cannot drink for a decade, and it's still there.
And was this part of your family background? Did you have this?
Oh, yeah, of course.
It was.
There was a beautiful scene that got cut out of Drunkard with my aunt, with an aunt of mine, and she has this big glass of vodka in her hand. I'd just given up drinking. It was my parents' 50th anniversary, and she takes a big suck of the drink. She goes, you know, I had a problem with drinking too. I would go out and walk the dog and fall over, but I got better.
Yeah.
And I couldn't help it. I said, gee, Aunt Blank, what happened? How'd you do it? She took a long pull and she went, willpower.
Yeah.
Oh,
willpower. That's the secret.
You got to talk about it.
There were, again, you know, it's nothing, you know, no one chooses it. No one wakes up and says, there's a quote from William Burroughs in the book, no one wakes up in the morning and you know, no one wants to be a junkie.
Right.
You wake up in the morning and you're hooked. You think it's the greatest thing in the world. And I kind of, sometimes I almost feel like I'm betraying, like, this is earlier Neil, you know, with a martini shaker and all that. And I would have parties and things. And I see that guy's kind of looking at me going, what are you doing? it.
Right.
You know, and you just have to kind of keep that. You have to become a different person. And that's why, you know, I'm uncomfortable being the welcome wagon for all this, because, you know, if I relapse tomorrow, people go, aha, Steinberg, see, there you are, you're a fraud all along. And that's a huge possibility, and you have to be aware of that.
Are you afraid of that?
I almost expect it, which is weird. It's like, it's not an afraid, like, oh my God, I'm afraid I'm going to have a drink. It's more like, yeah, I could see that.
Why do you expect it?
Because it's something that happens to almost everybody.
Yeah.
And one thing you learn in recovery is that things that are happening to everyone can happen to you. I think it's a danger. Okay. And part of me would like it. It's like, man, I could use that. You know, Milt Jackson, Modern Jazz Quartet, Japanese Rice Crackers, Jack on the Rocks.
Yeah.
That would be great. And then you have to go, no, then there's the next. I went to Japan for a week with my brother doing researching a story. And you think, wow, I'm in Japan. This would be the place. I'm out in the countryside in some Suntory bar. And I thought, no, but then you have to be on the plane. And that, you know, you have to kind of, that's why you need to be able to have your wits about you, because you have to construct this sort of thing where you go, no, this is still a bad idea.
Right.
But the temptation is still there?
Oh, of course. You know, I mean, that temptation is the wrong word. We had a barbecue for my kids off to Los Angeles, and I'm loading the beer into the cooler, and I'm thinking, man, this would be good.
Sure.
But you just can't, because one leads to, I mean, if I thought I could drink a bottle of wine at lunch every day and that would be it, I'd be there. I'd pronounce, flutter my hands to heaven, pronounce myself cured, and maybe it goes away. I don't know. Supposedly, it never goes away.
Mm.
And I feel like it never goes away, because I can see how much I think about it.
Yeah.
And even not drinking for almost a decade, I think about it. Imagine, you know, if I had another drink, this is what I boil it down to. If I had another drink, I would want to drink even more than I do now, which is a lot.
Right.
Okay. So you kind of have to, the choice is to do it all the time and drink a fifth of Jack Daniels a day, which I've done, or not to drink anything at all. And I think that's, I'm very proud of this line, as I said, that when you give up your addiction, you're trading one thing, this one thing you adore, you're addicted to, for everything else in the world. And it's so, addiction so skews your judgment that you're not sure that's a good deal.
But then it's everything else in the world versus this one thing.
So I get to do everything. I can ride Divvy bikes. I brought a cigar. My wife's like, you know, Neil, you shouldn't smoke that cigar. And I'm like, you know, honey, I've already given up one vice. I don't smoke them that often, but it's such a nice day like today. And so to me, there's a liberating thing to it where you go, you know what? I can have fun in other ways.
Sure.
And when you're still drinking, that's nuts. My sponsor, I remember him saying, well, you know, he was going back to things that he loved. And as a young person, you're like, what? I'm supposed to switch this for comic books? And
yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
But then when you're actually in it, you're like, okay, I'm here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't have to stand in a bar. I'm not doing that. So I'm going to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
And reading is part of it. I loved reading these different poets and things that I brought into the book. I read Infinite Jest, which is this 1,100-page book by David Foster Wallace,
mm-hmm.
because it's in large part about AA.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled out the 4 or 5 pages of it that are the best. And so you don't have to go through the whole book. I already did. It's a great book. I recommend it. But reading it was a joyful thing
for me.
And you're a great writer. And we're so glad.
So nice of you to have me.
Continued success.
Thank you, guys. Really appreciate it. I always enjoy being on your show.
That's Neil Steinberg, Printer's Row Lit Fest.
Out of the Wreck, I Rise, a literary companion to recovery. If you'd like to see when Neil's going to be at the Printer's Row Lit Fest, go to printersrowlitfest.org. Come see us again.
Anytime. Always fun.
Thanks so much, Neil.